Hello, Four Sober Chicks podcast listeners. We are Heather, Meredith, Dana, and Tracy, four women recovering out loud. We gather here from around the world to discuss all things related to alcohol addiction, sobriety, and various paths to recovery. We get real about the highs, the lows, and the amazing reality of living a sober life. This podcast is a creative collaboration by women, for women, and for anyone who supports women. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Four Sober Chicks. As always, joining me today are Meredith, Dana, and Tracy. And with us on this very special occasion is Megan Perry. We get to have a wonderful opportunity to sit down and talk with her. I've been stalking Megan, not in a weird way, but in a wow, I'm really interested in what you're doing in recovery kind of way, because she and I cross over as many of our guests have with She Recovers. And I was introduced to this work that she's doing in recovery coaching, and specifically with storytelling and embodied movement, and I was really interested in it. So I'm going to read her bio, and then I'm going to let her talk, and then I had an opportunity to sit down and do a storytelling workshop with her and her team, and it was incredible. So I can't wait to talk about all of this. So Megan is an award-winning storytelling theater educator, curriculum designer, and addiction recovery coach professional. She spent the last 9 years creating an innovative learning and performance experience, blending theater, storytelling, and coaching, and is an international educator in the field of recovery coaching. Megan is a global speaker and a storyteller, coach, and creator of two groundbreaking programs, Recovery Storytelling and Embodied Storytelling, and has designed countless other customized programs for diverse groups, both in and out of recovery fields. She is the founder of the Megan Perry Group and leads a team of talented, dedicated facilitators offering innovative, revolutionary recovery programs. So, as I was saying, I had this opportunity to see something that you were presenting. You were inviting She Recovers women to come and do this. And because I live in Abu Dhabi, these things usually fall at like 3 o'clock in the morning for me. So that wasn't going to happen. So then I was just kind of watching it, and I knew you were part of the conference. And so I was very excited about that. And I was just, again, didn't fall into a time zone that was worked for me. And then I had an opportunity to hear the women speak through the conference who had been through your storytelling workshop. And that was so incredibly powerful. And I love this idea of you're helping people tell their story in a way that's very impactful for them, very personalized, and also I think in a very small period of time, it speaks volumes to what to humanize, to connect, to all of those amazing things, which is really the ultimately what we want to do when we tell someone's story or hear someone's story. And you had said something about being caretakers of the stories when we interview people, and that really resonated for me, because that's what we do, right? We invite people here and we offer them this platform to tell their stories, and for us it's challenging. For other people, I can't even, you know, what that must be like. And so how do we help do that responsibly? So that was the first thing, and then I just loved your process. So I'm going to let you talk, and then how did storytelling, embodied storytelling, recovery coaching, how did that all come?
Yeah. So everything that I do today really comes from something that impacted me a lot. I do this work because of my own experience, first and foremost. I found in, middle school years that I was having trouble sleeping, and I was sick to my stomach all the time. And having trouble sleeping is like a gross understatement. I had horrible insomnia all the time. And I had these weird habits, like of how I had to, if I bumped my elbow on the left side going through a doorway, I'd have to back up and bump the right one. And like, I just didn't know what I was dealing with. But I know now it was depression and anxiety. And I was in my 30, like, late 30s, early 40s when I figured out that I actually had some OCD things that were going on back then. But I found that substances helped me deal with the symptoms of my mental health challenges, and then substances became the challenge. And I spent, over 20 years really just grappling and wrestling with substance use. It brought me to really just horrible places, and my stories are not unique. They are very similar to many, many others that we hear, but I share one of the things that one of the experiences that I had that became one of the most powerful stories that I tell is that I found myself pregnant, 5 months pregnant, incarcerated, facing a 2-year prison sentence on methadone, and just completely and utterly like bewildered at what had happened to my life and how I had gotten there and how I was going to make it through. It just left me just so I was just like so frozen, like I was a hollow shell that was just frozen in place. It really just left me so gutted, so devastated. But I still had this little bit of fight in me, I guess, because I kept fighting. And I have this desperate desire to be the mother that I thought I should be. And I didn't really want to be a mom at that time. It wasn't what anyone would say was you should have a baby. But I was having a baby. And so I wanted to do the things that you're supposed to do when you're a mom. And I was like totally incapable of doing any of those things. And so I hated myself. And I thought it was my fault. And it wasn't until decades later that I realized that it wasn't my fault. And that happened for me through storytelling. So often we're sort of led to believe that we have a story. Whatever our greatest challenge is for us in the recovery world, it's usually our challenge with substance use. For people with significant mental health diagnoses, then it's your story of your diagnosis and your recovery. And we become sort of, we start to just define ourselves within that box of this is my story. And I did that my whole, from like 15 years old on, I was defined by my inability to do things, my inability to function, my desperation to perform in order to protect myself from other people knowing what was really going on, and I, found myself, suicidal in college, but staying in college anyways, like, not attending to my mental health, but just, forcing through, pushing through. I graduated from college, actively dependent, on heroin, So I had this whole false outside, inside, and it became all of who I was. I was an addict. I was a felon. I was a terrible mom who lost custody of her daughter. I was just a failure at just about everything, and had no ability to just inhabit my body and my spirit and my emotional self or my being in any true, authentic way. And so I told my story from that perspective for years and years into my recovery. I did, I was finally able to pull in all the pieces that I needed to, not need to use substances to treat myself or deal with life anymore. And I was building my life, and you know, I had lost custody of my daughter at 4, and I got her back when she was 10. And I wasn't even in recovery yet. I was building, but I had not stopped using. But I did stop using 4 months after I got her back. And so I continued to build from there, but I still really defined myself as this single experience, which was 22 years, which is like more than a single experience. But that's how it was in my mind. It was this mono myth, right? This single myth, mythical kind of way of looking at my experience. And storytelling changed that. The art form of storytelling is what drew me out of that. I was telling my story for advocacy. I started doing recovery advocacy and criminal justice reform. I spent a lot of time in the criminal justice system, and I was very angry about it when I got out, and I left a lot of people behind. I got out and so many other people didn't. And so I was doing that work, and I was telling the myth, right? The mono myth. I was just telling that same story over and over and over, and it was harming me. And it was very successful as an advocacy piece, but it was harming me. And it wasn't very successful as an advocacy piece for people seeing me as a human. I was seen as like someone to feel bad for. Oh, that was terrible. We should, that feel really bad for her. We should like donate some money or write to our legislator to change the law. But I didn't have the kind of dignity and humanity that I deserved. And I just kept perpetuating that myth myself publicly, very publicly, on huge platforms, Harvard Law School, CBS News, National Documentary, the State House, you know, other universities and colleges and all of these places. And I just kept perpetuating the myth of Megan. Not the truth of Megan. And when I found the art form of storytelling, it broke my story into pieces, like manageable pieces. And so I think of us as tapestries. We're actually just tapestries of stories. We're thousands of stories, and each thread is a different piece. And even each experience has many threads to it. And so the art form of storytelling, it's a very short format, 3 to 5 minutes. And it's best done as like a single scene, a single event. So it made me bring the focus way into just single things, single experiences or parts of my life, and to take a much deeper look at it. And what that did for me was it gave me permission to be more than just that one story. It gave me permission to be a human within each of my experiences. And so I started off telling that story about being pregnant and while incarcerated as like very self-deprecating, very funny. You know, I can tell a really good, funny, like very dark, comedic, self-deprecating story. And people loved it. And they left with me, at me, until I really started to dig into the work. And then I found the real humanity in the stories. In that particular story, I found that I desperately wanted to be a good mother. And even in the work that I did in preparation for She Recovers Conference, in that particular keynote and working on the story some more, I uncovered a deeper truth, which is that I didn't even really want to be a mother. And it's in those discoveries in the storytelling that has given me permission to just be Megan, to just be a really complex person with a huge expansive emotional landscape, and I can have all the things at the same time and all the different feelings. I don't want the baby, but I fiercely want to be a good mother. and hold all of these things, and I still want to use drugs, and I can hold all of these things at once, and it allows me to be my true self. And so once I discovered that key, then I was like, oh, this is, I'm not the only one that's going to do this. We all need to do this. And that's what's brought me into the storytelling work that I do, and that's kind of driven everything. It's driven my own healing process, my own recovery, my work, my passion, my relationships. It's so fundamental to who we are as people. But I think using it responsibly, using it well, and using it to heal and not harm, that includes for ourselves, is what I think the purpose is of storytelling.
I love it. I think it's a secret sauce as well. Like, I think that's really, once you kind of experience it, I can see you having that moment of like, oh, I found something here. 'Cause I really think that experience was much like that for me. And I keep seeking these little tidbits. So, I am going to hand it over to, the ladies to kind of give them an opportunity to talk to the other big part that you talk about. Which, if you want to talk about this now as well, is that you can kind of tell your story from any perspective at any time. And that's a really a powerful kind of moment. I was like, huh, because like you said, we tell it from this lens of what works. I don't think anybody ever told me that I could do it from a different lens. Like, we're all just waiting for permission, right? Like, oh yeah, I could have done this all the time, right? All right.
So what is that like? Walk us through that, because the minute she said that, I was like, huh. And then she's like, I was like, huh. So I would love to hear that perspective, because again, I feel like while my story per se may not look like a tapestry yet, or I might not be able to talk like that yet, I do feel like it's always had to be from my perspective. So I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we learn to tell the stories that do two things: protect us and get our needs met. So that's part of the science of storytelling. Like, that's why we tell stories. We tell stories because of social survival. We need other people to survive, and therefore we need to belong. And so we need to get our needs met by other people. So our storytelling in part becomes how what's the story I need to tell to get my needs met in this moment? The other thing, which is closely aligned, is, the stories that we need to protect ourselves. And that's more on like an emotional kind of a level. So when, bad things happen to us, or when we experience bad things, we kind of write a story about it right away. Because stories are how we make sense of things. It's how we make meaning. It's how we understand. Like, we don't even form memories without a story attached to them. So if you think about, your entire childhood, like, you don't remember every minute of your whole childhood. You remember the moments that are emotionally salient, right? The ones that have an emotional attachment to them, because you've made a story to sort of make meaning of, I remember this one random moment. We were driving we lived in the suburbs of Boston, and we were driving into Boston with another family to go to a baseball game or something. And there was a car on fire on the side of the highway. And I will never forget that. And it was just this one moment. It had nothing to do with me. I just remember being in this car and being like really profoundly scared and disturbed by that a car could just like catch on fire, and did the people die? And, totally random, but I made some meaning attached to it, and I kept that memory. So we create a story in the moment of these like big things that are happening in our lives, and we created it of what we can make sense of it in that moment. And so if it's something really challenging, it might, you might be in a like flight, fright, freeze, you know, like you might be in a place of just desperately needing safety, security, protection. So you write this story that protects you, or makes you not the perpetrator, or makes you not the victim, or makes you not the villain. Like, so we find a way to tell the story that keeps us safe in whatever way that we need to be safe at that time. And we start telling it to everyone else, we tell it to ourselves, and it becomes the story of the event. And we have no reason to challenge that unless somebody or something challenges it. And so in the storytelling work, like that was the kind of the magic thing that happened, that I didn't know was happening. And then I figured it out, is that we go back and we look again, we challenge that story. It's an opportunity to go back and say, let me take another look at that experience. And we bring in the senses, we bring in the scene, the setting. And what it does is kind of put us back there to visit in a deeper way, a more connected way. And we can see things that we didn't see before. And because we have distance, we're in a different place than we were at the time. It gives us a different perspective. So now I'm safe. That was 10 years ago or 5 months ago. And I'm not the same person that I was. I don't need the same protection that I needed back then. And so it kind of gives us permission to see it in a different way. And that's all it is just going back within a different format. The reason the recovery storytelling workshop process works so well is because we're using creativity to open that door, and to give us like a framework and a method, like a container in which to do the work, because we can do that in trauma therapy, but it's done in a very different way, in a very direct way, and it's very language only based, and it's kind of, you know, it's not, it doesn't give that creative permission to explore in a different way.
I love that. I love the word creative, Megan. One of the things that I say a lot is I tell people I found my creativity again in sobriety. I'm realizing it more as I'm speaking with you and listening to you, but when I drank and used substances to numb, I mean, I love what you said, mental health challenges, and then substance use became the challenge. I mean, just doing these podcasts and listening to so many different types of recovery and how people do it's, it links back to mental health and just with my own personal struggles. Right. And so instead of, you know, dealing with that, with things, with my creativity, and I had a business that I was just creative all the time. And then that went out the door and all this other stuff happened. And I started drinking. Right. And then it changed to a different level. And one of the first things that I went to and ran to when I was sober was to be creative. Like, what do I love to do? And so I love the art form through storytelling, the art form of storytelling. I think this is your process of how you recovered and you stay recovered. Is that right? Am I understanding? I mean,
and storytelling, it was a big, it was the next thing I needed to keep growing. So
growing, like without the use of substances?
Yeah. So to me, the way that I look at my substance use is that it was a way to survive some things that were incredibly hard to survive and live through.
Yeah.
And so like, thank you, substance use, for getting me through a lot of things that I'm not sure that I would have survived without substances helping me not have to feel everything and having me, you know, it's just a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I no longer needed that coping mechanism, I still had a lot of growing to do. I still do have a lot of growing to do. And so for a while, 12-step helped me. For a while, you know, having a faith family and a foundation there helped me. And then I outgrew those things, mm-hmm. and I needed to continue growing. And so my creative work in the storytelling was how I took the growth to the next level, and that creativity, that storytelling, all of that is continues to be a large part of my recovery.
And so is your storytelling about your recovery, or is it about the story? You say your story. Is it stories that are related to your recovery or not?
It's all stories. I started the workshop. The original workshop was for people telling stories about substance use and recovery from substance use. And then what was happening is that people might happen to be in recovery from problematic substance use, but they were telling the stories they needed to tell, which many of them had nothing to do with their substance use. And so then it became about recovery from trauma, recovery from abuse, recovery from grief and loss, recovery. So people were coming with just whatever they needed to bring. And so I no longer need to really do any work around substances. I'm not interested. They're just not even a thing for me anymore. And so what do I have to recover? Well, I found a bunch of more stuff to recover from.
Exactly. And that's
to be a person, you know?
Well, and that's just key, right? Because you become sober and you have to deal with yourself. You have to figure out, why did you use a substance in a way that just made you totally escape what you're running, numbing, how you deal with certain situations, and then it turns into this habit, and this is how I deal with things. And yes, but at the end of the day, you're sober now, and you don't, it's like the desire to drink for me most of the time is gone. But the times that it wants to come back is when I'm having these mental health issues, you know, or these challenges in my life. So if I'm understanding, if I start to tell stories to understand those things, that's another way to cope and to deal and to face and get it out and let go and understand. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, storytelling is, I think it's what's challenging is it's hard to separate storytelling from everything else because it is so intrinsic to how we operate. We operate on a story-based like operating system, like our version of Windows is storytelling, right? It's so intrinsic to every process that we have. I think that storytelling is just how we, it's just an, I think that what it is for me is I just want to continue to learn about myself, to grow, to be better, to reach goals, to understand, to be in relationship with others. Like it is a tool for more authentic living, and creativity is play. There's wonder and awe and joy and just so many things wrapped up in any creative process. And storytelling, you know, I think is one that, like, not everyone paints, right? Not everybody can weave a tapestry or use a loom, but every single person who's ever walked the earth has had a set of emotions and the need and really primal impetus to storytell. So like it's so universal that I think it's just a part of all growth processes as we live our lives. So, you know,
How do you recommend the people that are listening to your classes to tell their stories? Do they keep journals, notebooks, computers? What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's so many ways to access storytelling. And I think, you know, one of the things that I encourage people is if you are in, you know, a recovery process where you've kind of got this, like, this is how I tell my story. This is my story. And this is how I tell my story. That I encourage people to go back and pick just a moment, a single event, a certain thing that you've been through, and just start storytelling about it. Go back and look at it again. Break up that thing of like let me tell you all the worst things and like a sequence of all the worst things that happened to me, then the miracle cure and how great everything is after. Like, break that into pieces. Break it up and go and find like who your true self is inside of all of those, that one story in those littler, smaller stories. So, you know, journaling and free writing, I do verbal storytelling. I think that's the most powerful form, because when we're writing, we're filtering much more through the prefrontal cortex, which is like the judge, the rationalizer, the justifier, the explainer. When we're doing verbal, it's, you know, we're using our voice, we're in our bodies, we're in the limbic and the amygdala, like we're much more connected to emotion and it's less filtered. And so finding places where you can just tell stories to people. And I'll be honest, there's not a lot of outlets for that. I don't know of a lot of places that are similar to what we do, where it's we build in we make a really safe container. We have the workshops, but then we also have a free story gathering every other Sunday afternoon, where people just come and they can just tell any kind of a story they want, and have like, it's just a small group of people, international people, and you can just like start to look at the stories and kind of try them out and have people reflect back to you. And so if you can find a space like that to just start to tell the stories in a different way. If you're in therapy, say, hey, therapist, I heard about this thing, this like storytelling thing. And can we, you know, use a prompt, right? So use a prompt to bring up a memory. What's a really scary phone call you had to make? Or what was the best phone call you ever received? Or what's a time that you had to make a really difficult apology? Or when was the time you needed an apology and didn't get one? Like, these are just prompts that will bring up like a single story instead of that monomyth kind of thing, and just dig in a little, explore. It's really exploration. It's really just following the story instead of controlling the story. So let the story lead you wherever it's going to go, and having it reflected back, having a space where it's shared with another person is really powerful, because we can't always see ourselves. And others will see, both reflect back to us what we're sharing and also give us new awarenesses of things that we might not have seen, and compassion. So I was brutal on myself in all of my storytelling about myself. I was awful, awfully cruel to myself, and relentlessly judgmental and all of that. And I would share that with other people and they'd be like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm so sorry that happened to you. You were trying so hard. And I'm like, what? I completely messed that up. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, that's not how I see, you know. So there's this beautiful thing of having it reflected too.
I'm really enjoying this conversation. Thank you for all of this, Megan. And Tracy and Meredith, you had such great questions. And my thought process went to the telling of stories from any perspective of any point in time in your life story. And what kept coming to mind was permission. It gives us permission to not tell the same story over and over again. But if we do tend to do that, dive into it deeper, we have permission to tell it a different way. It doesn't have to stay the same. And I really appreciate that. I have an upcoming keynote speaking gig that I'm doing in February, and I usually use my same story. So now I'm really starting to think about this, like looking at it from a different perspective, because I am 3 years into my sobriety and my recovery now. And it does hit me different than it did when I first started telling it. So I appreciate knowing that I have the permission to look at it in a different light, to tell it in a different way, and to understand that's okay. And I think that's where, like you were saying, people are getting hung up on that mono story of this is just the way it is. And it really isn't. It grows and evolves just the way your sobriety and recovery does. So I really appreciate that. And I don't really have any questions. I just wanted to really put that out there, that I appreciate the permission
Not that I needed it from anybody else, but didn't realize that I needed it from myself. So thank you for that.
Yes. Yeah, we get, you know, one of the things about some of our recovery pathways is they kind of give us a model for storytelling. And that model is super useful in the beginning. But then no one ever tells us that it doesn't have to stay that way. And so we kind of have to tell, like, well, I started when I was 12, you know, and these are all the bad things that happened because of it. And then this was my worst moment, the bottom, the jackpot, you know, we have all these terms for it, right? But then this is like the lowest, worst point. And then I did this, and now I have this, and this. It's great. And so we sort of get trained in that model. And then no one says, that's cool in that place for that purpose, but you don't always have to tell it that way. And that's how we get that reinforcement of like that monomyth of, you know, because this is the same model we hear over and over in our pathways, and we replicate it over and over, and it just becomes like the single, I call it the dominant narrative, you know, in the recovery movement. So it is permission giving to say, I don't need to tell you all of those things. I can give you that one sentence about being incarcerated pregnant, and you know everything you need to know about how bad it got. You don't need to, that's all you need to know. And I could give you, there's 20 more of those, just moments of, you know, where I could tell you that I was arrested on, for a Class B felony trafficking charge. I was granted bail because they couldn't find my prior record. I never should have gotten bail. I got arrested for the same felony, another one, doing the same thing. So I got a second charge of the same exact thing while on bail for the first one. That tells you all you need to know about my inability to manage my substance use, right? And then I can tell you, you know, one little scene or story or moment of my recovery process. And then you have everything that you need to know. You don't have to know all of those details. In the pathway, that can be helpful for people. Outside, if you're given a keynote, a 4-minute really well-crafted story is going to have way more impact than your 10 or 15 minute traditional, like skimming over the surface, you know, 10,000 foot view. An up close, because that's where we get the emotion. It's emotion that moves people. What really connects us all is that universal language. It's the only universal language is emotion. It transcends all barriers. And so when we can tap into that by going a little bit deeper and telling a smaller piece of it and really tapping into that emotion, then you've got everybody. They'll hang on every word of the rest of your keynote if you reach them in that way and say, hey, we're all the same inside. Like we all have that same, you know, we all know loneliness, we all know powerlessness, we all know hopelessness, we all know relief and joy and awe, and you know, so tapping into those things, it can be way more powerful. And that's what heals us too.
And I think also another really cool thing about that is kind of being able to craft that story to your audience as well, you know, mm-hmm. So being able to tap into, like you said, like maybe this part of my story has no connection to these people whatsoever, but these three other ones absolutely will talk to what we're here to talk about. And so I feel like knowing what your stories are and being able to craft that, you can have a deeper connection with people because you know that's how you can relate with them. And that relatability just turns their stories in, you know what I mean? Like it's almost like a back and forth. Cause I'm always trying to, like when I talk to friends, for example, I have one right now who is a dear friend of mine, and she is going through the first stages of wanting to quit drinking. And so I'm trying to listen as hard as I can. And then when she's asking me questions, I'm trying to find parts of my story that give her confidence in those areas. Or I had the exact same thing. Here's this snippet of this pretty long story, but this will help with where you're at type of thing. So I think that that's another huge aspect, is being to effectively being able to relate to people kind of on the same pathway.
I would say, Dana, that you should definitely talk to Megan before you do your keynote, because so one of the things that, you know, I mentioned that I did with Megan and her team is I did a 2-day storytelling workshop where she takes her and her team take you through the process of kind of the steps of it, right? So you're talking, we're all talking about very emotionally laden things. And I think what, Megan, you've done very well is crafted into a process. If you have this much time or this much time, that you can go through this process and get to the core of that. And then in the couple times that I've done it, I did it in a room of how many women were there? 80? You had to keep pairing them up.
Yeah.
80 women. We all have this similar experience. And 30 minutes was so profound. Or a 2-day experience with, you know, 5 people that was equally profound, and for a variety of other reasons. And then, like I said, hearing all these people speak that had an opportunity to go through your step-by-step. She's not kidding, Dana, when she says you get to that emotional core. It was a part of the conference I will never forget. So thank you so much.
Yes. And I work one-on-one with people all the time too, as well, because I'm a recovery coach, right? And so, you know, I've been a recovery coach for 9 years. I've been training recovery coaches for 4 years. Like it's an art form. It's something I know deeply, and love deeply. Oh my goodness. I love the recovery coach model. And so it's this I've found this beautiful, cool, like sweet spot of coaching and storytelling where, some of the most powerful work that I've done this past year has been in working one-on-one with people in story coaching. So it brings out all the beautiful aspects of coaching, like treating people as a resource and asking really, really good questions. And because you're the one who has to discover all of those things for yourself, of what the story means and what its shape is and why you're telling it and how, you know, what are the parts that resonate the most? Like, that's all yours, not mine. I'm not going to tell you what those things should be. I'm going to create a space in which you can discover them. There's this beautiful, I love the storytelling. I've been, you know, speaking, professionally speaking for a really long time, and then the recovery coaching, and it's beautiful work because it's helping people take what they already have. Like, there's just such a richness and of experience and beauty and resilience and creativity and all of these beautiful things inside each of us. And I get to just enhance it. It's like, do you know, it's beautiful healing work. Yeah.
I love it. All right. So when is your book coming out or your tapes? Because I want to hear
your motivational line of,
yes. I mean, and if you haven't thought of it, I hope you have. I mean, I can totally see it. My creative mind, you know, going like, how much, some of it can be vocal and then visual. And then these prompt questions that you offer people. Megan, do you have something like in the...
I don't know, Tracy, it sounds like I need you.
Maybe.
Help me do it. It's been a very slow kind of thing, like as a person who is sharing my work with the world, because I'm not minded, like that's not where my mind is in terms of, but really, I would think the reason you're asking is because this is healing for people. This is helpful for
yes,
people.
Yes, that's absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and just to share that more and on a bigger scale, I think you already help so many, but just to, I think what you're on to is phenomenal. It's beautiful, right?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
You're
I love
welcome.
it. And I too, that I said that I was going to write the book in 2024, and some other stuff has already come up. And I'm like, well, maybe it's 25.
Well,
You know,
I think you should
professionally.
definitely go into the digital part and use your voice because you have a beautiful voice, very soothed, calming. And I think that could be part of the appeal to this creation that you're going to create.
Thank you. Thank you. I do know what, you know, what people can access now is our free story gathering every other Sunday. That's anybody can show up for that. We have people just so random from all over the place, and they all are there because they understand like the power of story. And then the workshops, we're right in the middle of one now, but the next recovery storytelling workshop is February 3rd and 4th. You know, if you want to bring recovery storytelling virtually to a group of people, we do that. But just even just knowing that there is this other way of being creative and breaking it down and telling it sort of without being overly concerned about where it's going, but just as an exploration, is something that anybody can do.
Yes, I think that's so key, right? That's what we're trying. One of the messages in this part is like, how do you heal without hurting more? How do you help without hurting more? How do you help share your story without injuring yourself more? And I think this has been incredible. And I'm so glad you're here. And now everyone else can see why I became such a fangirl, was like, I need to meet her. And just to kind of have, I want you all to have this experience so that we can come back and talk about it. And then maybe we can do short stories.
Ooh, I would love that. That would be a great next episode, Megan, if you're down. Maybe you give us prompts and we have to tell a story. Yes. I'm kind of nervous already. But like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right. We'll put our brains together and figure out how to work it out. Because it's, yeah, I've done it in a couple different, I love it. And I would love to do it as a team, right? Like for our Four Sober Chicks and Plus, you know, so. All right. Well, thank you so much. It was wonderful to see you. We will put all of
Megan,
your links
you.
And all your connections and let everyone know where to find you on your website, on Instagram. We'll put all your handles on there. MeganPerryGroup.com.
MeganPerry.com.
MeganPerry.com. My apologies. And we'll put those in. And then, you know, listen to this episode when it drops. We'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Bye, Megan. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate you and wish you the best on your sober adventures. For more information and details on upcoming episodes, check us out on YouTube or Instagram at Four Sober Chicks. That's number 4 Sober Chicks. We welcome your feedback and look forward to being with you on the next episode.